Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program. This is called Today's Issues here on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening to AFR. This is a live radio program for the next hour and 25 minutes. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Chris Woodward's in studio here. Chris,
back again.
Thank with you. The American Family Radio news team.
Yes.
And co-hosting with us today from Kansas City, KS, is our good friend Dr. Ray Pritchard. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
We haven't talked in a while. Did you have a good holiday break?
We did. And, more relaxing than usual, not a lot of travel. Mm-hmm. Good to have a few days at home. And I was just thinking a moment ago, hey, we're in the middle of bowl season, right?
Yeah.
A lot of good football.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things are going good here.
Yeah. Now, weather in Kansas City today is what?
It is gray, cloudy, dreary, but it's like 50 degrees. We've had some rain, but there's a cold front coming in, so we're dropping down to 17 degrees tonight. So more typical winter weather on the way.
I would just say, as some folks in the country say, Ray, come again. Did you say going from 50 to 17 overnight?
That's right. It's 52 right now, and it's going down to 17. It doesn't seem right. Seems illegal somehow. That's that global warming that's messed everything up.
Oh, my word. Man, that's a shock there to the system. Well, we got a lot to talk about today on the program, and we want to invite people to join us. Walker, what are the many and varied ways, Walker, that people can engage us here on the program?
Yeah, a couple of different ways. First, you can go to our website, afr.net, and you can live stream the show there.
That's one way.
Also, at afr.net, you can get the podcast, which means you can listen to yesterday's show, tomorrow's show, but it's got to air first live, then you can listen to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't have a time machine.
Okay, that's way number two. That's way number two.
Yeah, number three is on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
Watch the show on Facebook. Number four, YouTube.
Okay. Just type in Today's Issues.
Yep.
They can watch the show live this morning from here in the studio.
That's right.
Okay, wonderful. And then we have the app.
We do. Download the app on your smartphone. That's five ways to keep up with AFR.
Download your app. The American Family Radio app is free on your iPhone or iPad or similar device, so take advantage of that. That way you can listen to AFR anywhere in the world as long as you have high-speed internet service. Speaking of anywhere in the world, Chris, the President of the United States has been traveling.
He sure has. He was in Iraq with the first lady to visit our service members over there, still protecting the men and women of the United States and freedom of the world. There's actually an update. I just saw it a minute ago, breaking news from some news outlets. Apparently, legislators in Iraq want the U.S. troops out because they don't like President Trump visiting over there. They called it very arrogant of him to come and visit and say, we're staying the course in Iraq. We're going to stay put over here or whatever else. So same story, different president. Now we have Iraq legislators not wanting our troops over there.
Is that their prime minister or their leader or majority of them, or they're just a couple of yahoos over there?
It could be it's at least two. If it's legislators, I don't know the officials' names and rank. And
all right. Well, I would imagine the majority of Iraqis would not be in favor of us leaving altogether. But anyway, we'll see what happens there. But the president did go over and visit our troops.
He did go over and visit our troops.
In Iraq, and then he went to Germany as well.
Yes,
right?
He did. Yeah, it was his first visit to a war zone as president. That's the big kind of milestone with the visit to Iraq. But then, Germany, we're still trying to ease relations and concerns over there. We haven't always been seeing eye to eye with Chancellor Merkel and some of the other leaders there over various things.
Ray, what do you think about the president's announcement to pull out of Syria with the troops? That's kind of divisive within the conservative community, isn't it?
Well, no one really knows what to think about it because, Tim, we've talked about this before. Which side are we supposed to be on in Syria anyway? I mean, that place is a, it's a snake pit of this terror group and that terror group. I guess we were there supporting the Kurds, maybe, and I think that's a worthwhile cause. In general, though, I think the president's instincts are right. I think most Americans are very weary of continuing to send troops far, far, far from home. I mean, how many years have we been in Afghanistan? Yeah. How many years in Iraq? So I don't have, personally, I don't have strong feelings about it, but I think the president is in tune with millions of Americans who say, if we're not fighting to win something over there, let's bring our troops home. Maybe, you know, maybe that's best
yeah,
I can do.
I agree with your analysis 100%, and your feelings are my feelings. I will say this. It's funny to watch the, I guess what President Trump calls the fake news media, Abraham Hamilton III calls the lamestream press, as opposed to the mainstream. But anyway, they're all for getting out of these places around the world as long as President Obama was in charge.
Right.
President Trump gets in charge and he decides to pull troops out of Syria, Walker. Then all of a sudden, he's irresponsible.
Yeah. Yeah, President Obama did the same thing, but President Obama announced it like 6 months in advance and told ISIS that we're getting out of there. President Trump gave a 30-day notice that we're getting out of there.
Right.
So, you know, as Ray mentioned, the Middle East has never been stable. I mean, you look back in the Old Testament, there's always been tribes fighting tribes, people fighting over land. The Middle East has never been stable. So the idea that the U.S. is somehow going to build a democracy out of the Middle East, that's a dream. So President Trump, I think, is using his instincts.
Except for
here.
Israel, which is a democracy.
Yeah, Israel is the only exception to that.
Right.
And I've argued that the only reason the U.S. needs to be in the Middle East is to protect Israel.
Yeah.
And so if we want to set up a massive military base in northern Israel on the border with Syria, I'm good with that. We can bomb Syria. We can bomb ISIS all day long. But we don't need troops on the ground in Syria in the middle of the civil war.
Permanently.
Yeah.
And that's what the president has decided. And also, I agree with him on Afghanistan. Again, what do I know? You know, I'm not privy to intelligence information that the Army does or Marines or Joint Chiefs of Staff or the president. But I just know that if you just ask me, what about leaving American troops in Afghanistan? I'm going, is this like 100 years from now? We're going to be saying, well, we've still got troops in Afghanistan, right? So I think he's downsizing in Afghanistan. I think he's cutting back in half. But you can fight the Taliban from now till Jesus comes back. And then the Taliban.
They're embedded in the tribal structure of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So until you change the absolute change the culture of that country, you're gonna, you know, the game at the fair where you push one thing down, the other thing pops up. It's kind of like that.
Whack-a-mole or something
You know, you push the Taliban out of this province, they pop up over there. You go to that province, they pop up where you just were, because they're indigenous to that culture. And I think a lot of Americans, what is it, 17 years since 9/11, and no end in sight. Again, I think, you know, we can argue strategy, and maybe was all of this what was behind the rift between the president and General Mattis? I mean, is that what's been reported? Precipitated him?
Yeah, that's what's been reported.
Yeah, I think General Mattis was, you know, for favor of staying in those places. And I'm sure he could make his argument. You know, he's a highly intelligent man and well-decorated military servant of our country. But I think the president, you know, is where most people are, and that is we just don't need to stay in these places forever. And I was kind of surprised that Senator Graham went on the attack like he did and others. Because against the president. The president said, you know, with President Trump, you've always got to consider that the media hates him, that the Democrats hate him and want to see him discredited and destroyed, and some in the Republican establishment feel the same way. Now, I don't think that's very many, at least ones that will say so out loud. So when you consider the things that are said, that you read about, you have to, you know, you have to remember these things. Mm-hmm. That you know, I have to remind myself, okay, who's saying this? Why are they saying this? Right. Why are they trying to make President Trump look bad? Because they hate his guts. That's why. Right. So, but these are the same people who, you know, when President got General Mattis to come on and be in charge of the Defense Department, mm-hmm. You know, they were saying, this is Mad Dog Mattis, mm-hmm. you know, bad choice. He's a hawk. He'll, you know, we don't need a guy like this in office. These are the, and then the same people when General Mattis resigns mm-hmm. the other day, right?
Right.
They say, well, he was the last adult in the room, you know, at the White House. We can't believe we're letting an experienced general like this.
Right.
You know, it's the
except
same people.
Obama fired him.
Yeah, the liberals, they hated right. Mattis. And now right. they're just the Trump derangement syndrome just is ratcheted up every week, it seems like. So
well, General Mattis, as you said, is a great man, right?
Yes.
And his military record is remarkable. It's unsullied. I think it finally came down to a deep disagreement
right.
about not only what to do in Syria, but what to do in Iraq and Afghanistan. And General Mattis is right. The president deserves a Secretary of Defense who actually shares the president's views. So mm-hmm. Maybe they just couldn't work together anymore. And
yeah.
here we
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I just don't want to hear anything from the Democrats and the Obama crowd and the Hillary Clinton crowd. These are the people who authorized regime change in Libya and which led to the demise.
Right.
I wouldn't say they killed him. They didn't kill him, but what their actions did, the U.S. actions did under the guise of NATO, was to destroy the government of Muammar Gaddafi. You know, he's no right. saint, but he wasn't an ISIS guy.
Right.
Right.
And he.
Yeah, does anybody want to argue Libya's better off today than before?
You know,
so Obama, President Obama, and Hillary Clinton, they bombed the, bombed Libya until they got regime change, and now we got chaos over there,
yes.
and we got people. ISIS is over there. These people are migrating from Africa through Libya all the way to Europe.
And then people talk about how we need to go in there and fix it.
Right. Well, you know? Well, it was fixed. We had right. Muammar Gaddafi right. in charge, and he was cooperating with the U.S., but...
You know, one thing that Senator Lindsey Graham and others won't ever say, and they're never really asked the question is, when is a good time to get out? What's a good pullout look
right.
like? They'll never say. They'll say, well, we just need stability right. in the region. Well, what did we do to get stability? We've been there 17 years, and we still don't have stability. So, but I think at the end of the day, some of those people are in favor of staying over there into eternity.
You're not going to change the people in Afghanistan unless you change their religion, all right?
True.
Same thing in Syria. Now, Syria is more secular
mm-hmm.
war, some would argue, but, unless you're going to send 10,000 missionaries into Afghanistan, you're going to be over there shooting rockets at them from now till kingdom come. Go ahead.
Well, Chris. You know, Steve and I were talking about this last week.
Who was?
Steve Jordahl and I were having a discussion in the newsroom, and really we could not think of any Western power, if ever, having success in Afghanistan. The Brits couldn't do it back in the 1800s. It was a debacle during the Queen Victoria era. It was basically Russia's Vietnam or the Soviet Union's Vietnam back in the 80s. And here we've been here for 17 years, and places that we've taken over have since been taken over by the Taliban, or the Taliban's popping up in another area that we weren't concerned about because it wasn't a problem. So I don't know what it is about American mentality.
Quite frankly, I don't know who you're fighting. You're fighting the Taliban. The Taliban is going to be there forever, as we've said before. Mm-hmm. Initially, we went in there 17 years ago to take out camps that they were training Al-Qaeda, or what would have been Al-Qaeda for.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes.
That's why we went in there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, through Afghanistan, here we are 17 years later. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Is the president back in the White House, by the way?
As far as I know, he and the first lady arrived in the wee hours of the night when we were still resting comfortably.
I was probably killing him having to just be cooped up in the White House. He probably had to get out. You know, I heard somebody criticizing the president the other day on not being, not visiting with the troops overseas this Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And there he was, like 12 hours after the criticism,
yeah.
He was there. This person didn't know, I guess, that the president was going to go because, you, as you say, you don't tip off people who want to do the right. president harm by saying, hey, we'll be there next week, yeah. 12 o'clock.
He landed there. On a dark runway, yeah. I heard.
Yeah, that's the way it works in those parts of the world when you want to keep the mission secret. All right, what's the next story, Chris?
Well, the government shutdown is still a big issue. Government really? Still shut down. Yeah, President Trump still holding out for that border wall funding. Democrats say not going to happen. One of the people that's on the president's side in all this is Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. He was on Fox and Friends today. This is going to be clip two, Adam. Senator Cassidy says he's willing to take it slow if it means getting funding for President Trump's border wall.
It would be nice to have the $25 billion long-term commitment, but on the other hand, this problem's not going away. We need to secure that border, and there always will be that pressure of, oh my gosh, here comes several thousand more folks bringing drugs and human trafficking and mm-hmm. just otherwise good people, but they're coming here illegally. Yeah. So if Schumer will buy into that, I think we can make some movement.
Now this, of course,
who was that? And I was hearing
Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. This, of course, comes after President Trump famously said on live television from the Oval Office in the heated exchange with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer that he is willing to shut down the government for border wall funding, saying, I'll take the mantle, Chuck, things like that. We don't have to play that audio. But I think at this point, do we expect the president to continue his position? Do you want him to continue to hold out? Because we're in day six. He said he was going to do this.
Right.
And as we discussed last week, if you cave at some point or you agree to, let's say, $2 billion and it's a fence, not a wall, mm-hmm. that arguably is going to be used as your read my lips moment. And all this was for nothing.
Yeah, $5 billion is
peanuts
compared to the massive budget and the other money we spend elsewhere. A lot of it's wasteful. So I think if President Trump dips below $5 billion, into the threes and twos, I think this was a big waste of time because he's asked originally for $25 billion. Now he's down to $5 billion. I mean, if you go below that, the fight's not even worth it. So I don't think President Trump needs to let off any because it'll be viewed as a cave to the Democrats.
Right.
Well, on the other hand, Walker, I mean, and you make a great point, but isn't it true that Schumer, they're going to do everything, Schumer and Pelosi, everything to keep him under $5 billion, right?
Yeah.
So at some point, I mean, is it the 6 days we're in hasn't made much difference. It happened over Christmas. Maybe it's not going to make that much difference anyway. But I'm wondering if the end game here isn't you make a deal for $2 or $3 billion and then you get a promise to reconsider for more later, declare victory and go home and just move on. Mm-hmm. I think the president actually has the high ground here because yeah. most Americans want border security. Whether they want the wall or not, they know we've got to have security on the southern border. So I think this is a winning issue for him, but it's not such a great winner. I think if it goes on 30 days, 50 days, 60 days, mm-hmm. at that point, people really, maybe some real harm gets done to the economy. This has to be solved sooner rather than later, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a hard one to predict. Who's going to be the winner and the loser, Chris? Because my gut tells me that the advantage is with Schumer and Pelosi here,
mm-hmm.
because they're not in the White House, and so, but I could be wrong about that. I tend to think what will happen is what I think Ray you're alluding to. Probably Schumer and Pelosi might come back with, an offer of half of what mm-hmm. the president wants, and the president would take that. But I wouldn't be surprised if Schumer and Pelosi mm-hmm. don't give him a dime and just say, go ahead and keep the government shut down, and you're the one who will suffer in the polls.
Yeah.
And that, of course, the president, you know, that's – this is a hard one to prognosticate where it will end and who will be the winner and loser.
Right, and keep in mind it was 6 months ago, maybe longer, that the president offered them above and beyond what they wanted in DACA.
Yes.
So he already threw a really sweet deal out there to him, trying to be the deal maker in exchange for things like the border wall funding.
That's why I say, excuse me for interrupting. I know it's
No, that was the stopping point.
Okay, it was? Okay, then I didn't interrupt so people can save their emails. Because that's one thing that I do that annoys people who listen to the show, because I hear from them, and I'm trying to get better at that. That's my New Year's resolution, but we're not to the New Year.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying, Chris?
I don't want to interrupt
you. No, quit interrupting me. Quit interrupting me, Chris. I'm talking. What are we talking about?
DACA.
Yeah, DACA. Okay, this is why I say that Schumer and Pelosi won't give the president a dime. If they're not willing to trade DACA for a security wall funding, which is inexplicable. It makes no sense. There's no reason to oppose. I don't care how liberal you are. There's no reason to oppose a wall. Mm. What does it hurt? What does it hurt?
In exchange, you get amnesty.
In exchange, you get the DACA, and these people get and you get credit for it, and get a lot of love from the left, from your base. If they're not willing to trade that right there, I don't think they're going to be willing to give the president a dime for a security wall. Which means the pressure is going to mount, to me, on President Trump and the Republicans. But we'll see again. But maybe he'll hold the line. But then you're talking a month, 2 months, 3 months. How long is this thing going to go on? I will say it tells the people I do feel sorry for, Ray. the folks who work for the federal government who aren't going to get paid.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I was reading some of their post last night on some stories I was reading, and I mean, that's real. You know, they're not getting a paycheck. Now, they'll get back pay, you know, whenever this thing is over, but in the meantime, you know, they got to make house mortgages and buy the groceries and, you know, all those kinds of things. So that is a real situation for people who work for the federal government who won't be getting a paycheck, at least of this.
Well, you wonder where's the tipping point here where it veers from one side to the other. What I mean is, 6 days in, most people are going to survive that, right? Mm-hmm. But if it went 30 days or 50 days, you're talking about real hardship on some people, you know, the employees of the government who aren't being paid. At some point, then public opinion shifts against the president. So don't you have to make a deal before you get to that point, or else?
I think it shifts. I think it shifts against. It depends on what the bargain, what the negotiating terms are. I think if President Trump says I'll take a little less than $5 billion, and the Democrats won't budge and give him a dollar for the wall, I think the blame shifts to the Democrats. But if President Trump, on the other hand, says I want $5 billion and I'm not budging, then I think the blame shifts to his shoulders. So it's all about who's willing to negotiate. And if Democrats won't even come to the table, then I think they'll take the blame.
Well, also, the reason this may not be solved anytime soon is because there's no political pressure in the immediate future to do something. For instance, an election. If we were 3 months out from an election, then both sides would have to say, "How does this hurt or help me in the election?" Mm-hmm. And they have to make that. For now, we're 2 years out.
Right.
From the next election cycle, presidential election cycle, and so there's no immediate pressure to do anything for either side, or President Trump or the Democrats. I do think it's completely and utterly, and I hope I would say this if this were a Republican doing something like this. I think I would, but this is completely and utterly unreasonable on the part of the Democrats. $5 billion in the scheme of our national budget. We vote 50, 60, 70 billion dollars for storm aid.
Yeah.
You know, after hurricanes, and we're talking about a paltry $5 billion, and they won't even give that for border security? Unbelievable. They're just wanting to try to make the president look bad and give him a defeat. That's all they want to do. That's all they care about. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. and you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, Stephen McDowell has been a personal friend of mine for a couple of decades now. He is one of the best historians I know. He is president of the Providence Foundation, and no one documents early American history, especially the Christian aspect of early American history, better than my friend Stephen McDowell. He is going with us on our spiritual heritage tours, and he'll be talking all along the way and answering questions, and you're going to enjoy spending time with him if you're able to go with us in June or September. Again, we're going to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and we're also going on a separate trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So if you'd like to go on either one of these or both of them, contact us at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu.
The PC police over at USA Today published a nasty hit piece on Kyler Murray, the Oklahoma quarterback and Heisman Trophy winner. Just hours after he won the trophy, reporter Scott Gleason published a collection of what he called homophobic anti-gay tweets. Turns out the tweets were written by Kyler when he was 14 or 15 years old. Kyler, who is now 21, apologized, said what he wrote as a teenager does not reflect who he is today. Really, USA Today? Smearing a guy because of something you wrote as a kid? Our public universities are responsible for creating this nonsense. A dangerous new world, folks. A world of perpetually offended snowflakes triggered by a teenager's tweets. And now we live in a nation where your kid's future and life could be destroyed by something he tweeted or Instagrammed as a 14-year-old. And if you don't believe me, folks, just ask Kyler Murray. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this program here on the American Family Radio Network. You want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net is our email address. If you're sending me an email about Tim, quit interrupting people, I already got that message. So save your email, because you'll be interrupting my day by telling me don't interrupt people. So, anyway, seriously, I'm trying to get better at that. Aren't I, Walker?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Okay, thank you, Walker. Chris Woodward here with American Family Radio News. Dr. Ray Pritchard joining us from as co-host today from Kansas City. And we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. On most Thursdays, we're joined by Jan Markell. Jan is president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries and host of a radio program, Understanding the Times, each weekend here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, Jan, I don't know if I've ever asked you this question, but I don't know why I have it. What is Olive Tree Ministries? Where did you get the name of your ministry?
Well, the Bible refers to an olive tree with Jews and Gentiles are grafted into the Jewish olive tree, and hopefully we can create what's known in the Bible as one new man, which may not happen until the millennium, but there are we're at least making an effort to create one new man here with Jews and Gentiles both knowing the Lord Jesus as Savior and Messiah.
Amen. Let me ask you this. Your ministry focuses a lot on Bible prophecy, right?
Yeah.
What?
Not exclusively, but very heavily, Tim, yes.
Yeah, Bible prophecy and also current events.
Current events, yes.
And so, it's not just Bible prophecy, but is there something you're looking for next to happen on the world stage, so to speak? I know we're getting into some speculation here, but I mean, you do study the scriptures and you do, yeah. we all believe that Jesus Christ is coming back again. I mean, there's all of
it. And soon.
I think one
of the things that we're looking at, Tim, just happened in the last week, and that was U.S. troops pulling out of Syria. And the reason that's significant from a biblical perspective is that there's going to be some sort of a crisis in Syria, even beyond the current crisis, and people wonder how can it get any worse with possibly a 500,000 or more dead and more on the run and all that, but it's going to get even worse at some point. Israel is going to obliterate Damascus. That's Isaiah 17:1. And now that U.S. troops have pulled out of Syria, we believe that that is on the horizon, which would be a very end-time type of phenomenon. And then part B of that is now Iran will have a perfect land bridge to the Mediterranean as a result of the missing U.S. troops that sort of were almost a guard in Syria, actually protecting the Kurds, protecting what Christians are left, and there aren't many, and protecting some of the Yazidis. In other words, protecting non-Muslims. And that is why a number of us are so distressed by the pullout. But again, as it relates to the Bible, number one, Isaiah 17:1, which would be the obliteration of Damascus, and number two, Ezekiel 38:39, Gog and Magog, is now far more imminent because of the removal of the buffer of U.S. troops or the impending removal of those troops.
Damascus is almost gone already because of the...
You can go to a number of cities in Syria, and because of barrel bombing and other things. Actually, Damascus is a huge city, and there are portions of it that they still have restaurants, they're still entertaining, mm-hmm. things like that. But yes, a good deal of Damascus has been affected in this Syrian war, and other cities are completely obliterated. I mean, it's tragic if you look at drone footage.
You didn't hear our earlier segment, but we were debating about, or at least discussing, with the knowledge that we have here, which is we're not privy, obviously, to what the President of the United States has or people like that, about, you know, how long do you stay in these parts of the world, Syria and Afghanistan? I mean, people get weary of staying for, seem like forever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So but you think that it's a mistake to for the American troops to pull out of Syria?
Well, I think it will backfire on us, and I think the evil ones will gather together even more so in Syria now to plan our demise and Israel's demise. Yeah. God won't let Israel be obliterated, of course, but I'm of the camp that says it's better to fight them over there than have them come over here. And then I'm also wanting to protect the Christians, those that are left in that region. So many, at least 50% have been exterminated.
But wasn't the Syrian president Assad protecting the Christians inside his country before the civil war broke out?
Well, I'm talking about now protecting them from ISIS, and Assad is another story, and I think most Christians there would say he was pretty favorable to them, but it's ISIS. ISIS has not been defeated. They have been struck hard, but they're not defeated.
Yeah.
So they're the ones who will try to go after the Kurds, the Christians, Israel, and other minorities in the region. It's ISIS we're referring to.
Yeah. What do you got coming up on your program this weekend?
Tim, I have a fascinating true story of a survivor a Christian of the Paradise, California Fire, and I've titled the program Beauty for Ashes because she's trying to spread the gospel amidst all the people who were displaced and lost everything back on November the 8th. It's a wonderful, I mean, it's heartbreaking, but she's trying to make the best of a tough situation. We'll tell her story this weekend. That's Saturday at 1 p.m. Central, Sunday at 12 noon Central. It'll be uplifting, I promise.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to it. Jan Markell, our guest, joining us from the Twin Cities. Jan is the president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries. And check the website and Facebook page is what?
OliveTreeViews.org. And if you just go to Facebook, it's Jan Markell's Olive Tree Ministries.
Okay, thank you, Jan. God bless you.
Thank you. Goodbye now.
Ray, what do you think about what we were discussing there?
You know, the point she brought up show how difficult the situation is in Syria, because we generally, a few minutes ago, we're taking the position that the president understands the mood of Americans, bring the troops home. But Jan is bringing up the other side. Anytime you take American troops out of a dangerous situation, you create a vacuum. So is the situation in Syria going to get better or worse? I fear, at least in the short term, it's going to get much worse after our troops are withdrawn, especially for the Kurds and especially for the Christians, who now are probably going to feel like they have no protection whatsoever.
I would just say maybe the best policy is this, and maybe this is understood, and that is for the president just to say, listen, we're pulling our troops out of Syria because we can't stay there forever and and be the world's policeman, as he says. And it is, as Ray said, it's a snake pit over there. There aren't any good guys.
Right.
Hardly. Mm-hmm. Okay? You may just say, listen, we're pulling out, but we want you to understand something, all of you people, all of you groups and factions. If you mess with Israel, Israel can take care of herself.
Yeah.
Okay, number one.
Right.
But if you mess with Israel, the United States of America will join Israel in repelling and or destroying whoever is the perpetrator.
Right.
So I would just make that clear. Maybe that is understood in the region because they're not, the Syrians and Russians aren't really, quote, messing with Israel. Something happened occasionally. The last couple of days, Israel bombed inside Syria a couple of places. But I'm talking about an all-out war breaking out. I just don't see that happening anytime soon, as long as the United States and Israel, are together. Ray, your thoughts
on
that?
We are going to stand with Israel, right? Mm-hmm. We are going to stand with Israel. Mr. Trump has made that abundantly clear. And if they are stupid enough, any of the players over there, to launch an attack on Israel, America, well, first of all, Israel can take care of itself to a large degree. But number two, we're going to come to their defense as we should.
Yeah. What do you think Russia's deal is over there, Ray? Why are they so – they've always been so involved with Assad and Syria. Do you have a particular thought on why that?
I think the Russians want a base of operations in the Middle East.
Okay,
it's not going to happen in Jordan, which is another whole deal, right? It's not going to happen in Egypt. It's certainly not going to happen in Israel, but it very easily could happen in Syria. That the destabilization over there actually, I think, plays into Putin's hand. That gives them a lot more influence. I'm a pessimist about Syria in the short term. I fear it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, Mr. Trump said that, what is it, Erdogan? He was going to, the Turkish guy is going to, he's going to wipe out ISIS. Oh man, this shows how bad the snake pit is over there. So we're figuring this man in Turkey is going to get rid of the rest of ISIS for us. That is hard for me to believe, but I don't disagree with the decision to bring our troops home.
Ray, do you think Turkey's okay with ISIS flourishing in Syria? Because to me, the Turkey leader wouldn't want ISIS creeping into Turkey, making their way towards Turkey.
And I agree with that. I'm just skeptical. I'm skeptical
that they're going to take them out.
That's right.
Turkey's going to take them out.
That's right. I'm skeptical of those promises.
Yeah, it's a snake pit. Other than the things we've discussed here, I think the Middle East is pretty good shape. Y'all get a
rich
good vibe?
Rich in resources.
Aren't we getting a good vibe from the rest of the region?
A really good vibe here, right?
Yeah, I think so. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Chris.
All right. In my opinion, really good sound. Outgoing Senator Claire McCaskill. She lost the Senate race
from Missouri.
To Josh Hawley. Mm-hmm. In an interview on CNN, outgoing Senator McCaskill expressed concern, confusion, and well wishes to the youngest woman ever elected to Congress, that being Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This is the non-endorsement, clip four.
I don't know her. I'm a little confused why she's the thing, but it's a good example of what I'm talking about. A bright and shiny new object came out of nowhere and surprised people when she beat a very experienced congressman. And so she's now talked about a lot. I'm not sure what she's done yet to generate that kind of enthusiasm, but I wish her well. I hope she hangs the moon.
That's exactly what you don't want someone saying about you as you're arguably the face of your party going into the new year in which your party regains majority control over Congress. And, you know, we talked about...
Why, you think that was an insult?
Well, it certainly wasn't anything positive in there. I mean, she referred to her as a bright, shiny object. I don't know why she's popular with people. I mean, she's saying all kinds of things. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But... I think, you know, if you were a Republican about to enter office and someone in your party who has been well-known for 12 years or so, whenever McCaskill took office, saying that about you, you would be like, look, don't ever speak about me again, please. That's not good publicity on my end. I don't know that it helps or hurts Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, she could say the sky is fuchsia today people would love her for it.
I think this is the rift between the establishment Democrats and the upcoming, you know, more left Democrats. Because, I mean, there is that divide between the Pelosi's and the McCaskill's and the Schumer's kind of want to, you know, keep going through with the Clinton route and the Obama route. And then here comes Cortez moving the party even farther left. So I think there is a little bit of strife there. And maybe that's why the comments were.
Yeah.
Look, it's time for Claire McCaskill to come home to Missouri, you know? I mean, she's 65 years old, and Alexandria...
Cortez.
Thank you. She's, what, 28? There's a generational divide here. Mm-hmm. The 65-year-old senator, outgoing. Who would you rather listen to, Claire McCaskill or Alexandria Cortez? I don't share this young woman's philosophy at all. But she is a gifted communicator. She understands social media. She's a millennial. You know, all the things you can say. She's got the it factor. And Claire McCaskill, she doesn't get this young woman. But I think Alexandria Cortez is going to be around and going to do quite well up in Washington. Quite well.
Yeah, I think the Democrats view her like the Republicans did Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That is okay. A lot of what she says is good, but my heart palpitates at what they might say tomorrow, which I would have to agree or disagree with and explain away. So that's, you know, unpredictable, I guess you could say, in many ways, in terms of what they might. What they might say that you have to defend or you have to reject, and she has some growing popularity within the Democratic Party, and she does represent the new left, if you will. That I'll call it the new left, of the Democrat Party. She's probably to the left of Bernie Sanders.
They make Roosevelt look like a rhino.
Yes, exactly. But we'll see what happens, because there are a lot of young Americans that agree with.
Look, she's a good politician. And the young people who they can't find a job or they can't pay their rent, she goes on. I watched her on, you know, Twitter or something, and she was making a salad making a salad, you know, and talking about politics and her meal that night and all this. Right. You know, we can kind of laugh at that, but she understands the real power of social media. That's how. Plus, she has this far left philosophy. I'm not surprised at her popularity.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this, Ray, in the sense that, you know, I don't agree with her policies, and sometimes she seems to not really know what she's talking about.
Right.
But that being said, I think even the media is giving her a hard time, kind of mocking her about various things she says, where she gets things out of order or whatever. But I think the Democrat establishment honestly doesn't like her because she took out one of their colleagues in New York.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. Next story, Chris.
Well, you know, it's hard to believe, but in the next 6 months or so, we're going to start seeing presidential debates amongst the Democrats, the 11 billion Democrats that want to be the Democratic presidential nominee. They've already kind of set out when they're going to start debating. It looks like June. But the story I have here is...
You're kidding.
California. Yeah, no. We'll be here.
And how many we're going to have?
It's going to be, from my understanding, it's going to be like we had in 2016 with the GOP debates, where you're going to have so many that you'll have an undercard. And it may be, actually, I'm not making this up. It's not fake news. It may be spread out over several nights in a row. So, you know, tonight, coming up tonight on debate three, you know.
I wonder if Russia is going to try to help the Dems this go around. You know, they helped Trump last time, apparently.
Tonight's Democratic debate, sponsored by Russia.
Russia gas.
Visit St. Petersburg.
Bernie honeymooned in Moscow.
Yeah.
Or Moscow, if you want to be formal.
Sponsored by Smirnoff Vodka.
Yeah.
And, all right.
Well, in addition to all that, California is...
And visit Siberia.
It's lovely any time of year.
I'm sorry. No. I know I interrupted you, but I couldn't resist the Siberia.
Hey, you know, California, I don't want to finish Siberian that sentence California. And get in trouble.
Not comparable.
California, there's been people there that have complained that because the state is so large and it's one of the most diverse states in the nation, they want to have a more larger role in the election process. Their primary has been kind of buried amongst all the other states having a primary. And there is a movement afoot in California to move their presidential primary up to somewhere around March. You know, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, they're the first batch. But California wants to move theirs up because they say we're bigger, we're important, we should have a bigger say and a bigger role in this kind of stuff. So let's try to move it up to March. And we've got some sound here from Professor Emeritus of Government Charles W. Dunn. He's one of the frequent contacts of our AFN's Chad Groening. Dr. Dunn, he said that an earlier California primary could actually spell doom for some Democratic presidential candidates. Clip 5.
Candidates to win in California are going to have name recognition, and that's going to cost a lot of money. And they're going to have a lot of manpower to do the door-to-door campaigning that'll be essential in California, because if you look at who has a possibility of doing well there, you begin with the three leaders, Biden, Sanders, and O'Rourke. Biden has the possibility of doing well in California, and if he were to sweep California, that'd put him in pretty good stead against all the other candidates, but he's used good. And you have the people like O'Rourke and Sanders and others who might see their way clear in California to set him aside. That is, Biden could lose it all in California. And the same for Sanders, and the same for O'Rourke.
Now, you know, there's that law or principle that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's what it boils down to here. This could spell doom for some of the presidential candidates. The O'Rourke that he mentioned there is the Beto O'Rourke. Yeah. But, you know, Kelly, I could see a Kamala Harris really working hard to try to, you know, pick up California. And certainly because you win an early thing, that doesn't mean you're a shoo-in. I mean, Mike Huckabee won Iowa and didn't go on to get the nomination back in 08.
You know, I'm looking forward to a good year, Chris. I really want to spend any more time talking about the Democratic primary. I know you mean well.
Noted.
Can we move on to the
next story? Let's move on to stocks.
Okay, good.
Chris is never going to bring in Democrat news anymore.
Noted. Never. I'm going to never again. Okay, exclamation.
You know what I'm saying, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
It's nothing personal.
Yes. Yeah, I got you. Okay. I got you. So about that NAFTA thing, no.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, the stock market roller coaster continues. We had a fantastic day yesterday, a record day for the Dow, 1,086 points and a smidge. That's an accurate figure in where I come from. But 1,086 points yesterday brought back a lot of what was lost on Christmas Eve, and now it's looking like it's going to be another bad day. The Dow is currently down 349, and it's been up or down all morning.
So how does that affect you, Chris?
Well, we've got some sound here from Dan Celia talking about it on his financial issues program this morning. He talked about yesterday's record day and what we can expect to see today. Clip three.
How about yesterday in the market? So much for all that loss from the Mnuchin drop on Christmas Eve. We had a pickup, just a little bit of an uptick yesterday in the Dow. It was just up 1,000 points. I mean, you know, it's just a shame. Anyway, just kidding. Up 5%. Unbelievable. The NASDAQ up 6% or close to it. And the S&P up 5%. So an amazing day. By the way, that is an all-time record high move for the Dow. Question is this going to hold? Not likely. I said earlier this morning, the algorithms are warming up for the sell-off. Don't get too excited. And maybe some people as well will sell. In other words, low volume week, the algorithms are kicking in, computer trading happening probably this morning early.
Now, I would also say it's not time to panic. As Tim pointed out yesterday, in the immortal words of our president, Tim Wildman, stocks go up. Stocks go down. That's what you said yesterday, and I wanted to bring that sound in. I should have. So, you know, today's terrible news might be tomorrow's, you know, let's have a ticker tape parade.
You know, we'll just wondering, though, with the market growing thousands over the past 2 years up to, we were at one point, I think, or the Dow was around 25,000, then a 200 or 300 point drop in a market that size really isn't that big. Now, if the Dow was at 1,000 points at the high and then it drops 500, of course, that's a huge drop. That's a 50% drop. But I'm just wondering if these drops are a little overrated. You know, like if a 1% or 2% drop might just become the norm, then it goes up 1,000 points like it did yesterday.
Yeah. I think certainly something that could bring back a lot of bring the numbers back up, you know, if we can reach a new trade agreement with China, and the president says we're working on it to try to end the trade dispute that we've had with them for a long time, if he reaches an agreement with them, things will go up. If more positive news about the Fed chairman staying put, they're not going to get rid of him, things like that, things that will ease concerns of investors, we'll continue to see you know, some positive news. But as Tim mentioned yesterday, stocks go up, stocks go down. You know, it will rain, it won't rain, we'll see. Don't panic. As Dan would tell you this, and it's all the more reason to listen to Financial Issues on American Family Radio, shameless plug. Listen to Dan's show because Dan's going to tell you what you need to know, what you need to take away from bad days going forward, things like that. So don't panic today. Keep it going.
You a big stock market guy, are you, Ray?
I used to be.
Yeah.
Bigger than I am now.
So you lost everything? Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
a lot more cautious now.
Allison, my wife, and I were talking about this the other day. We were reliving some bad memories. And a lot of people listening to us right now can identify. This may be what you're talking about, Ray. What was it? In the last 20 years, we've had two or three times where if you were invested in the stock market, you got killed.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
And I was invested
back in 2008?
I was invested, like a lot of people were, in my 401k. You know, not heavily, but I had some,
you were there, yeah.
Half the money in stocks, and man.
Kaboom.
It was awful for a lot of people. And I felt bad for the people who were getting ready to retire. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones who were hurt the most. We'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues. Stay with us.